Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to One Up, delivered through the AI podcast channel. I'm your host as ever, Guy Drinkle, and joining me as usually is Carl. How are you doing, Carl? I think it's been a couple of pods now, hasn't it? You missed the preview.
It is, yeah. No, unfortunately, I was a bit under the weather that day. But luckily, Stu stepped in with all his comic book knowledge, and it was a great show. Actually, it was funny listening from the other end of the. This side, and you know, you guys did a great job previewing the game and helped hype me even further, but I'm glad to be back now for the all important review.
Maybe you got the hard job, or maybe you got the geezy job. Let's get into it then, shall we? So, as ever, we'll start with the news, get that out of the way, shall we? But don't worry, lads and ladies, this is the Spider-Man review, but we're going to get the news out of the way because it has been probably the best part of a month, I think. So, news. Sony announced that they're finally caving into the overwhelming pressure, and I think it was Fortnite that pushed it over the edge, that they're finally going to introduce crossplay. We've mentioned it on literally 90% of our pods, Carl. What are your thoughts on Sony finally adding it?
I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer, really. I mean, we all knew, despite Sony's defiance and all, you know, what was that comment that was like, oh, so, PlayStation's the best place to play, you know, and that was kind of the reaction, a bit of arrogance, but you just kind of knew. I mean, look, the two things we've probably spent the most time talking about on this pod, despite the fact neither of us are, well, obviously we both wanted, of course, crossplay. I think everyone wants crossplay, but I mean, they're not our greatest passions, but that says it all, that crossplay and Fortnite have been the two most frequent topics on this podcast. And I mean, that just shows, like, I've thought that in recent weeks, I noticed that, like, Eurogamer, which is probably my favorite site to go to for news, which is probably apparent every week when we're doing the news and I'm quoting stories from them, but they actually have a Fortnite section on their site now, like, which just shows, I don't think I've ever noticed them having a dedicated section for one particular game, like, and that just shows the push and power that Fortnite has. And, you know, we knew, obviously, Epic have been pushing behind the scenes for this. I think we rewind to a long time ago when they supposedly accidentally hit the Switch to allow crossplay, and there was an afternoon where PlayStation and Xbox players are playing together. Like, I think that was probably intentional, you know, and did all along. So I just honestly think it was a no-brainer, and I think it's no surprise that Fortnite was the straw that broke the camel's back. What do you think yourself, Guy?
Yeah, I think as you've been hinting towards, it's been inevitable, because I think the pressure has been mounting from certain games companies. I think Bethesda's been one of the big spokesperson, but I think the juggernaut that is Fortnite is probably the one that's tipped the scales, because if you get on the bad side of Epic Games at the minute, you're on the bad side of the entire gaming stratosphere. They just, well, we don't know when this Battle Royale game's going to die, but at this stage I don't think it ever is. But it's such a powerhouse in gaming. I mean, I think probably the biggest franchises now, probably Call of Duty, your GTAs, and Fortnite are definitely up there. If we're, well, whether it's unfortunate or not, if you're doing a gaming Mount Rushmore, you're going to have to put a big fat Fortnite character's face on there, aren't you, at the minute. So that's the power that game has. And Sony, who are the biggest thing in gaming, I have to admit that as an Xbox fan, but Sony, as powerful as Sony are in the games company, the game designers always win, don't they?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you want to keep the best developers and publishers on side, and I think Sony just had to do that. It's not just like Fortnite is obviously the star, but you know, you'd assume soon after Rocket League and Minecraft will probably mm-hmm. follow suit, because they're already cross-platform across Switch and Xbox. And you do wonder, as you mentioned, which was a fair point, actually, I hadn't even thought of that Bethesda have spoken out on it. So you wonder what is the future now that all the platforms are cross-platform on the free-to-play kind of smaller games. Not small as in their user base, but smaller as in price and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. You wonder, will it come to AAA now? Could Fallout 76 be cross-play across all platforms?
I think they've said it's not going to be at launch, because I don't think they expected Sony to do it this early on. But because of the way 76 is an online game, I'm not sure if it's as simple as flicking a switch, but I imagine that they could easily get the infrastructure ready for such a big fan base.
Now, I'd fear if Fallout 76 was cross-platform, at launch. I mean, Fallout games are infamously buggy when they first mm-hmm. launch, and that's single-player Fallout games. So
every,
I can imagine what an online
game is a big bug
at
the start, isn't it?
Exactly. So I think maybe baby steps, but you know, it'd be interesting if maybe 6 months down the line, if it was cross-platform, and you know, maybe eventually if we're seeing Call of Duties being cross-platform, Red Dead 2, of course, the online, could that eventually be cross-platform? I mean, it's very interesting to think what the, you know, how these boundaries are being broken down now that Sony have finally, you know, let the drawbridge down. So, I think we've got a lot more to come when it comes to cross-platform, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're getting onto the stage where we're near next gen, aren't we? So it might be a bigger thing in next gen. But if Fortnite's the one that kicked off this, as you said, lowering of the drawbridge, I think it's a good start. And then maybe the next gen, you can just see the big gaming universe that it is, really. And you've still got your exclusives and stuff, but breaking them barriers of games that everyone plays, I think that's only a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it is honestly the way forward. I don't think the whole thing of you have to have the same console as your friends. You know, I just don't think that's plausible anymore, especially because of like games like Fortnite and Rocket League and Minecraft and the like, with the younger crowd. I mean, if you want to keep, you know, the parents, especially on side, that they don't have to be pushed out to go get another console and this kind of thing. I mean, I think it is the best way forward to keep everyone happy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the best way of putting it. But a bit more news from Sony. Probably not as big as as the previous one, but they've announced a mini PS1. How excited for this are you, Carl?
Ah, no, I love these kind of things. I mean, I have I was gutted when I missed out on the original run of the NES Classic. I got it second time around. I got the SNES Classic, you know, so I even buy those terrible, which will probably come to soon anyway, the Sega, they licensed out to At Games, and they're god awful, but you buy them just on the hope that they'll be okay. You know, so this is right up my alley. And I thought it was funny when, you know, the NES Classic first came out and did so well, and people talked, kind of speculated on a PlayStation. They're like, oh, Sony would never do it, but it'd be so much fun. And I thought, like, why wouldn't they do it? Like, you know, if it's going to print money. Exactly. Like, that's the thing. And you know, it is interesting, the library. I mean, you can never really, I don't think you can pick a perfect 20 games on PlayStation, and you know, a lot of the bigger games would have been third party, so it'll be interesting to see what they come up with, but so far so good. I mean, Final Fantasy 7, which of course is one of the infamous games when it comes to that console, and Wild Arms, which is a personal favorite of mine, and it came up when we were discussing my favorite games. So you know, I'm happy with those two to start, and you know, surely Metal Gear Solid has to be on it, like, for sure. Like, there's a few other kind of games I'm himming and hawing, you know. So what do you think, guys? Is this something that would interest you, and any games that might make or break it for you?
I'm trying to think back to what I played on PS1, because I imagine most people similar ages to us, PS1 was probably their first big console. I know people had the Nintendos and stuff there, but Sony was the first for me. Or PlayStation 1 was the first one, I should say. But, I haven't really looked at what games. I know they've announced Final Fantasy 7, but I think that they've also announced that's getting like the remastered version, or whatever version of the remastered version
that,
is coming
that
to
game's,
Xbox.
That game's never coming out.
No, but there's like, you know? there's the HD remake, isn't there? And then there's the remaster one that's like Stuff of Legend. That's been shown for 3 seconds. So I think that's coming to Xbox, the one that's already out. So I'm not
sure. Oh, it was the Android version originally,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think so, yeah.
I didn't know that was coming to Xbox. I know it's coming to Switch, so
yeah,
it makes sense
that's
that
when
it's coming to Xbox
it,
as
yeah.
well.
I think it was 7, 8, 9, 10. Definitely. I think
it's, if it's the same ones that for Switch, I think it's 7, 9, 10 and 10 to 2 HD and 12.
Yeah, I'll be getting, I'll get 7 and 9, put it that way. But anyway, on this mini PS1, yeah, if it's cheap and it's not like the Nintendo where they're impossible to get after a day, it might be something that interests me, because just, I may not remember all these games by name, but I'm sure I could remember some of the games that'll be on it if I played them. I don't think I'll do Crash Bandicoot and Spyro, which is probably a big part of my childhood.
I think I know, I get where you're coming from, but I do think Spyro, I don't think so, because, you know, the Spyro game will be coming out around the same time. But I think Crash Bandicoot, the Insane Trilogy, has been out kind of long enough. That I think Activision might be willing to play ball with at least one Crash title. And personally, I think Warped. No, because I think they can milk a re-release of that with how much of a cult classic it is.
Yes, they could.
But...
so I'd be buying that.
Yeah, no, I think so many people would like, but I think Crash Bandicoot Warped could definitely show up on it, especially with it, if they're looking to bring out a new Crash Bandicoot before long, which is the rumor. So I think that's there. I'm just gonna have a look at that lineup here now, because for some reason I can only remember the two games, probably because they're the two I care about the most. I know Tekken 3 is on it, which.
God.
Is a good game. You know, it's quite infamous with it. And you'd assume, like, beyond that, it's kind of some speculation, but I would expect Metal Gear Solid. I'd expect, like, Parappa the Rapper. I'd expect Medieval. You know, these kind of, cause they're obviously first party games. So we got Final Fantasy VII, Tekken 3, Ridge Racer Type 4, Wild Arms and Jumping Flash. I have no idea what Jumping Flash is.
Nope, not a Scooby.
Apparently it's a PlayStation Classic. But, we'll see they'll probably sprinkle out some more games over the coming months. But, hopefully, you know, cause some of our favorites show up there. But nonetheless, I'll be picking this up. And it seems like though Sony might have some competition with, you know, I think it was the same week it was announced or kind of reported that the patent had been finalized for what seems to be an N64 classic. And some people are speculating that maybe Nintendo might spring a surprise release, kind of like they did with the NES classic. And we might have the two old rivals going head to head again, the PlayStation and the N64. Which would be, it'd be fun, that. And honestly, as much as I'm I was more of a PlayStation guy, I think when it comes to like a classic console with a selection of games, the N64 probably wins because it had that more tight packed, small, but really good kind of, lineup. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And I think, the very same day, which I don't know if they were running scared, but Sega announced that their Mega Drive Mini, which they're supposedly taking serious this time, has been delayed to 2019. You know, maybe it's a bit about wanting to improve it, but then also wanting to avoid clashing with the PlayStation, because I think there would only be one winner there.
I did love my Sega. I did love my Mega Drive, I'm not going to lie.
Me too, and as I said, if they do it right, like I've picked up the bad ones, so if they do it right, and, you know, because like there's some of the emulated kind of versions of the Mega Drive games that they release now, like that are releasing on the Switch and stuff, are brilliant. Like, so if they could bring that quality and pack like 20 of those into the one box, you know, I'd be in line to get one, that's for sure.
Just all the Sonic games you can, and Echo the Dolphin. That's all I needed.
Oh no, I need Streets of Rage, Streets of Rage 2, Golden Axe.
True that. But I just remembered this news story because I was Googling to see if there was anything we missed, but Telltale closed down.
Oh, yeah. How did I forget that?
Yeah.
No, it was crazy. I mean, we knew they'd kind of change things and scale back to less projects, but I mean, to close in the middle of releasing the fourth and final season of The Walking Dead, you know, it's heartbreaking, really, for... Like, I was a big Telltale fan, especially of The Walking Dead. I only got around to playing the third season recently, and I mean, I really enjoyed it. Like, I'd been trying to play Guardians of the Galaxy and a couple of other games that weren't quite there from them, but I thought the third season of The Walking Dead was really good, and I was so excited to play the fourth season, and it's quite a kick in the teeth that we're just never going to see the end of Clementine's story. Like, you know, it's going to happen.
That's the kicker, though, isn't it? I mean, The Walking Dead's, I think, probably known as the best one. I think Wolf Among Us is meant to be good, and the Borderlands one's meant to be really good. But no, the Walking Dead one was the bread and butter, and it is a shame that we're not going to see the end of it, because the first series, or whatever we call it, is... That's probably one of the most upsetting and heartstring games I've ever played, man. It's a brilliant game.
I know, it is fantastic. Like, and you know, all through that series, there's just moments that break out. Like, even at the start of the second season, if you remember, when you befriend the dog, but then he's so starving, he attacks you for the beans, and then she has to kill him, you know, put him out of his misery, and... You know, that's just devastating. Like, I like, it's some of the best writing in video games that I've ever came across. And it's just such a shame that, you know, they didn't, you know, as much as like I've heard, I haven't gotten around to the Batman games, but I hear they're really good. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if Telltale just, and clearly they did, they just took these massive licenses on, and it can't have been cheap to get these licenses. And, you know, it just seemingly they just weren't paying, people weren't buying enough copies of these games. And, you know, I think, as I said, Guardians of the Galaxy was a massive miss, because I can imagine getting any kind of Marvel project wasn't cheap. And then for it to be such a flop, it just is such a shame, because maybe if they just kept kind of The Walking Dead and Wolf Among Us, kind of, you know, big properties in the comic book world, but not quite, you know, as massive as a Batman. Yeah. Like, maybe it just could have gone a bit better for them. But, I mean, the real, as much as us fans are victims, the real victims seem to be the staff. Like, mm-hmm. there's been some incredible revelations there as far as, you know, unpaid overtime and, you know, no redundancy for these people. They've all just been left unemployed with nothing. You know, it's yet another more evidence of how much
cutthroat and
the gaming industry is. That's it. Like the developers, they have no protection, and I think maybe someone needs to regulate that some more. Yeah. You know, some restrictions have to be put in place, I feel.
Yeah, maybe unionize it or whatever. Be the one. But I think, unless you've got any news stories that we've missed.
No, I think we've hit on the biggest stories that happened over the bit of a break we've had there. So I think we're well covered. We'll hopefully next week we'll be back to our regular scripted news schedule. I'm sure it'll be something about crossplay and something about a battle royale game, quite possibly Fortnite.
Oh God, yes. But it is time for why people are here. It's time for the Spider-Man review. This is going to be chock full of spoilers, so if you've not played Spider-Man the video game, please do turn it off. We do appreciate you listening, but I mean, look at the title, people. So Carl, this game, I'm gonna come straight at you with overall thoughts, and then we'll get into the meat and drink of it.
Wow, you know, like I was hyped, but you know, even then it's met my expectations and more, you know, like this game. It's just like, to be honest, I was on a bit of a hiatus. I hadn't played anything for, you know, maybe 6 weeks at the time. And, you know, usually when that's the case, nothing can force me out of that. It's just when something clicks in my head, I'm like, I fancy playing the game today. But Spider-Man came and I was like, I have to play this game. And I was just instantly hooked. I mean, it's just everything about the game. You know, I'm not going to say, you know, there will be a little bit of a critique, you know, have to keep Insomniac on their toes, but I mean, everything, the combat, the web slinging, the story, it's one of the best, you know, there's been some good comic book games, but rarely do they actually have a worthwhile story. I mean, Arkham games aside, but this rivals the Arkham games for a story. I mean, the characters, the performances from the voice actors. I mean, my God, like it's just, I can't say enough positive things about this game. And how about you, Guy? What are your initial thoughts?
Well, to put it bluntly, I absolutely love this game. People who listen to this regularly, and obviously you, Carl, and whoever's in our WhatsApp group will know that I'm not the biggest fan of PS1, of PlayStation. And even in the first few seconds, I was bitching about the controller and stuff like that. I finished that game pretty quickly because sleep did not need to be needed when this game was out, when I was playing this game. I did not need sleep. It was Spider-Man, food, and then trying not to, like, die. that was about it. But, this game, I mean, it was that fun. It was that great. I mean, in terms of Game of the Year, maybe we'll talk about that later on. And we'll obviously come to that. We'll come to our awards or whatever towards the end of the year and stuff like that. But this is definitely up there in terms of my Game of the Year for personal taste. It was just fantastic. And it was the first game for me that I've only played two other games on PS4. But this is the first game for me that I've just sat there and just went, you could literally just give me like... You could probably just give me some Legos to make out of a controller, and I'd still play it. I couldn't give a crap where I couldn't give a crap where the analog sticks were. I didn't give a crap if it felt small for my hands. This game, it just was perfect for me. I absolutely loved it. It may not be the best artsy game, and may not win the awards it might deserve, but it's probably one of the most fun games I've played in a goddamn while.
Definitely. I mean, that's a you know, if you want to put one adjective to this game, it is fun. I mean, and that's the main thing when it comes to video games is fun. I mean, I've never, you know, all the side stuff, like I platinumed this game and my last trophy was completing the game. You know, it didn't feel a chore to do the side things, uh-huh. you know, anything like racing around, you know, the web slinging, swinging from building to building, you know, it was just so much fun, you know, trying to think, how can I do this more stylishly? You know, the fighting, you know, even the kind of the bases, I suppose, kind of side things where you have to kill waves of enemies, you know, the kind of horde mode as is, but tends to be the term for it. You know, it was just so much fun. What's the highest combo I can get here? And can I do it without being hit? And, you know, nothing felt like a chore. You wanted to do everything in that game. You know, you wanted to see everything. You wanted to see every corner of the city, every nod to another Marvel character, to a, you know, it was just, like you say, it's a fun game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll come to upcoming releases and what's next for 1UP later on, but if this is in my top three, probably top two by the end of the year, it's going to be probably the best of a PlayStation game I'll ever play. Put it that way. But we'll get into the more specific things now then. the basis of any good Spider-Man game is the web slinging, isn't it? And we've had some goods from the early PlayStation Spider-Man games, and then we've had some weird ones where it takes you out of the web-slinging element. But what were your thoughts on this? Because I thought it was pretty much perfect, and it felt as real as web-slinging in a man dressed as a spider in spandex can feel real.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head there with it. You know, when it is comes to Spider-Man games, it is the web singing is the first thing you notice. I mean, and I remember back in the day playing the first movie game, and like the fact your webs clung to the side of the buildings, you know, kind of just was brilliant to me. I love that, not having my webs come from out of the sky.
Heaven.
Exactly. It was massive. And then they went even further in the second game, you know, with having you use opposite triggers for left and right hand, which was just unreal. Like, you know, kind of the thought process there. And you know, I think latter games kind of took a step back, you know, we went back to the heavenly webs, like in the Amazing Spider-Man 1, which it was an okay game, but it wasn't great. And although Amazing Spider-Man 2 tried to pull it back to the buildings, it was just, it wasn't enough. And I mean, but this Insomniac clearly have taken note of all this over the year, all the critiques, all the praise. And, you know, they've brought everything into their web slinging and more. I mean, it's just amazing. The fact you can like slingshot yourself across rooftops and, I mean, the acrobatics you can do in midair. And I mean, it's just insane. You know, I feel like, well, I don't even want to say it because there's so much thought went into every other part of the game as well, but I can imagine the amount of thought and effort that Insomniac put into the web singing, and it really has paid off. You know, you feel you are Spider-Man, you know, and it's what I've always wanted in a Spider-Man game when it comes to web singing, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a similar realm of web slinging, you obviously have the wall climbing and stuff like that. For me, this wasn't as slick as the web slinging. I think it was a bit clunky in places. I mean, especially when you're trying to go down a wall rather than go up a wall. I think when you're sprinting and everything's high paced, it's all right. But when you're going a bit slowly and trying to take your time, it felt a bit clunky. What are your thoughts on the wall climbing and Assassin's Creed type parkour?
Yeah, no, I would agree there, to be honest. I mean, there is some times where like I'd be trying to kind of crawl up a wall to kind of stealth, kind of pull a guy over the wall, and like suddenly it wouldn't be going the way I wanted to. Like he'd jump, I'd tip over the edge and get spotted, or, you know, it's not quite as responsive. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it is a shame. They had some great ideas when it came to the park order. There was some really cool bits, especially that you kind of see towards kind of the end set pieces of the game, which I'm sure we'll get to later, like where they kind of showed off some of the wall thing, being able to kind of zip from wall to wall, and mm-hmm. you know, and it's a great idea, but I just don't think it was executed quite how they would have liked it to be. Unfortunately, it is one of the few critiques that I'd have of the game, and I share it with you. You know, it is a shame that they didn't quite pull that off, but to be honest, I didn't spend all that much time climbing walls. I was more so web slinging around them.
It's such a minor thing, but I think in fairness, you have to bring up the goods and the bads, and I imagine the goods are going to heavily outweigh the bads in this one. But we'll come to combat, because web slinging, it's either good or it's bad. That's the way it is, isn't it? But combat, I think you go in a bit more depth in this. But overall, what did you make of the combat?
You know, I think it's an excellent kind of evolution of, firstly, Spider-Man games themselves over the years, and then I think also from taking some nods from the Arkham games. I mean, you know, let's call a spade, it is very much the Arkham combat system. You know, even the spider gadgets quite reflecting the, you know, Batman's gadgets, but, you know, that I think it's fair enough. I think some people kind of point that at it as a critique, but I don't think so, because I'd say that for me, when I first played Arkham Asylum, I thought this reminds me of the Spider-Man movie games I used to play on my PS2. You know, like the kind of symbols that you're getting hit make a lot more sense for Spider-Man, because he has an actual spider sense, you know, and that was always in the games, and now they've Batman kind of took from that, and now Spider-Man's took from Batman, and I'm sure maybe the next Rocksteady game possibly might even take a couple of cues from this game, and you know that can only be good
Superman
for the game
on the floor. Superman stood on the floor fighting people. Don't think that'll work too well, but for me, I thought the combat was overall very good. As you said, it's taken. It's basically the same as the Arkham games, isn't it? With a Spidey twang on it, but that's not a bad thing. You know, I couldn't really care. I love Arkham, and this just adds to the experience. But you mentioned gadgets and suit powers and stuff like that. Do you think they were quite balanced in terms of combat?
Yeah, like I, you know, personal preference. I'm more kind of stuck to dodging and punching, but you know, I would for it's a good option for crowd control. You know, you had like the electric webbing and the bomb. The trip mines were fun, actually. Yeah. There's something satisfying about webbing two guys together. But I mean, I thought they were a nice little nod. You know, they weren't a necessity, but they were there if you wanted to try and add a little bit more style to your combat. So I didn't think anything seemed particularly overpowered. I mean, a couple of the superpowers are quite ridiculous. I think it was like one that just like knocks everyone over in like a massive radius. But at the same time, you don't get to use them too many times in a combat, a certain combat set piece. So I don't think they were too overpowered, and I think it was a nice little kind of thing to set the different suits apart from each other, and just have something rather than it simply being aesthetic, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I quite like that you didn't have to wear a certain suit for the power either, because everyone has their personal taste and stuff like that, but some of the suits for me just look really crap, and some of them were brilliant. But I did try to give them all the bash. What was your favourite suit, if you had one?
I'd say it was probably one of the Spider-Man 2099 outfits. Possibly the second one, the white one. I was wearing that like at the end of the game, so you know, I suppose it kind of stands out even more in my mind as a result of that. The Ghost Rider one was pretty cool as well, though.
Yeah, that was quite
cool. What about you?
I can't remember the exact name, but I think it was one of the last Armored Mark, whatever it was. I think it was the red and green one, if I remember correctly. I think it was that one. But the first, like, not noir, but the first stealth black one you got. I quite like that one as well.
The Black Cat one, was it?
Yes, I quite like that
That is really nice, actually. I know, I'm with you on that. Like, I thought it was a cool nod. I know there's been a lot of people kind of complaining about the lack of the Venom suit, but apparently there's a reason for that. So might play a bigger part in a sequel.
We're getting Spider-Man 3 the game finally. well, we've mentioned combat there, and we'll come on to enemies, not the bosses and stuff like that, but what did you make of it? Because you obviously had General Thugs, you had Kingpin's men, you had demons, and Sable. What did you make of the range of enemies?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I actually thought it was a nice nod how you had, like, the, I suppose you had the three particular factions. And then you also had kind of some more generic thugs and four factions, really, of the prisoners as well. So, I think they were, well, the prisoners and the generic thugs and the Fisk might have all been fairly similar. I think that there was enough diversity there. Obviously, the demons had like their weird energy weapons and, you know, like the whip guys and the sword guys and,
jetpack knobheads.
For Sable. I had some frustrating moments against Sable. Like, sometimes with the random Sable crimes, you know, you just happen to get caught in a crossfire and they just happen to be shooting in a certain pattern that you literally can't dodge the shots and you're just dead. You know, you get stunned and you're dead. So Sable is definitely the most infuriating of the enemy types, but I like the diversity because, I mean, like, you know, we bringing Arkham up again, but with Arkham, when it comes to the general enemies, it's still, you know, it's still great with the combat, but you've still got the same kind of group all through, and you've got the same exact, you know, you've got a shield guy, you've got a and they look the same, whereas with this, although, you know, each group kind of had their shield guy and each group had like their guy with an automatic rifle, but it just seemed a little bit different. I like those little nods. Mm-hmm. And I think it really kept things fresh for me. What did you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think towards the probably the first half of the game, before the spoiler, as I said earlier, spoilers, before the Riker Island incident where all the prisoners got out, I thought it was maybe getting a bit samey because the demons were the only one who were really different. But as soon as the Riker stuff happened, I think introducing Sable, it really added that extra diversity that it needed. Because as you said, Sable, especially for me, they were just different level of knobhead. They just did my head in so much, and they were probably one of the only factions that could actually kill me to a certain point where it got actually frustrating. But yeah, I think that's pretty much been it for the realms of combat, unless you've got anything else you want to add.
Well, I suppose it's a good point to bring it in. Would probably be boss battles. Not to get into the story of them, but this is another point where I'm going to be a little bit critical. I thought the boss battles were a little disappointing. True. I mean, one that particular, like, and I tie it back to the preview, and I remember Stu talking about how intriguing it was that Taskmaster was going to be in the game, and what would they do with Taskmaster. And I agreed with him completely. I was like, there's a lot of potential there. But then you come to the fight, and the only thing, Taskmaster blocks your moves, but throw something at him, or throw a random gadget at him, and now you can just do your punch combo on him. And it was just like, just seemed a little lazy, you know, and it seemed like there was a bit of wasted potential there. And similarly, I thought I think it was the first boss fight with Mr. Negative, you know, when you're in the train, you know, just dodging and then punching and then dodging and then, you know, it
very
just,
samey, wasn't it?
Yeah, like a little repetitive. And although the boss fights later in the game felt, you know, they were dressed up better. You know, I'll give them that. You know, they felt a bit more exciting. I still felt that their core, they were, you know, maybe with the last boss fight aside, they were a little,
to be fair, even the Doc Ock one was a bit, samey. To be fair, but that had a lot of story driven behind it, didn't it? So that's fair enough. But for me, I think it started off all right. I think the Shocker Shocker. His first one was all right, where he was doing the shockwaves and stuff. I think it was a bank building. I think that started off all right, but after that, it was kind of all downhill. You mentioned Taskmaster, especially. He was a disappointment. But I think we'll talk about the side missions in a bit. But he was a disappointment. Falcon and who was the one with him? An Electro. That one was a bit crap.
That's true. Like that's what I was thinking of. Where you're kind of stuck in the air, and it's kind of like they kind of dress it up to look like it does seem on the surface to be like this grand battle, but then you're like, oh wait, you know, I'm just stuck in the air automatically. I don't even have to make myself stay in the air because it's just going to automatically pull me back up. And I mean, you're just rinse and repeat, dodge, vulture, web him up, punch him. And then, you know, it was a little repetitive, to be honest. It definitely got old quick, but I think you can almost forgive it because of how good the story was around it at the time. You know, but it is something certainly that they can work on. I think for the inevitable sequel, you know, will be better boss fights.
I think that's one point. I think for me, probably the most disappointing one was the Scorpion, because it started off so well with when he drugged you and you were stuck in that hallucinogenic world where you pretty much had massive scorpion tails coming out of the acid sea or whatever it was. I think that was quite interesting, and then it kind of got nothing came of that afterwards, and then you were stuck in a boss fight where him and Rhino would hit into each other and you just threw stuff. That was really disappointing for me, because I think that was probably the most intriguing one. But what were your thoughts on putting the bosses together, because there was obviously two bosses at a time, really. What were your thoughts on that? Do you think it needed figuring out and maybe having more of an interesting, because we'll kind of link this in with character as well. What did you make of the lesser members of the Sinister Six, shall we say?
Yeah, no, I liked the idea of kind of the handicap matches that Spider-Man had to enter, because, you know, it makes sense on the surface, because these are people he's defeated multiple times before, so pair two of them together, it kind of doubles the danger. But then I don't think they did enough with that to make you feel a danger. I mean, like in the Electro Vulture fight, you know, you're fighting Electro first and then suddenly Vulture starts flying at you. But it was so easy to just dodge him and web him and hit him. And, you know, he didn't feel like a threat. And the same thing in the Rhino fight. Like it's quite cool the way Rhino, you can't actually damage him directly. You know, so you have to use the environment. I thought that was a really cool feature, but then suddenly Scorpion shows up and I'm like, oh my God, this could be tough. But no, you just like spam just webs jump at him and he just drops limp on the ground and you just do your combo on him. And just, I think I did it like three times and suddenly Scorpion was out of the fight, you know? So I just don't think it was a great idea having 2v1. And I hope they do that again in a future game, and maybe even 3v1. But I just think they need to kind of make you feel like threatened. You know, they need to give you kind of a bit more of a challenge, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's been the lesser members of the Sinister Six. And I'll bring up a bad point after we've discussed this. What were your thoughts on Mr. Negative? Because I think this could go either way in terms of a positive cliche, negative. I think this could go either way with him and how people see him. But I think Stu mentioned it in the preview that he's a bit more of a lesser known villain. Do you think he was? Did you think he transferred well? Because he was lesser known. We've seen all these other ones in the cartoons, in films and stuff like that. How do you think he did in probably his biggest debut so far?
I honestly thought it was excellent. I mean, like as you say, I think Mr. Negative only debuted in the comics, you know, in the noughties. And, you know, I haven't read comics since I was a kid. So, you know, I didn't have too much experience kind of Mr. Negative. I knew of him. I knew who he was. But, you know, that was kind of the limit of it. You know, so I thought it was a bold move to give such a big part to such a, you know, a lesser known character, especially when Spider-Man has such a gallery, a rogues gallery, you know, as Stu said in the preview, it almost rivals Batman's, and it really does. And there's a lot of kind of Spider-Man baddies that I personally love, like the Chameleon and Kraven the Hunter and Mysterion and all the likes. And they left all of them out. And, you know, obviously that we didn't, I haven't even mentioned Venom, but, like, yet here we have this lesser known Mr. Negative, and I thought he was brilliant, because I thought, you know, well, you have like the career criminals like Rhino and Shocker and Vulture, and I mean they're a little kind of, they're not, yeah, I mean especially Shocker and Rhino, they're a little one dimensional, you know, let's be honest. Scorpion, all right, his whole thing is that he's psychopathic and, you know, he just wants to kill Spider-Man and Jonah, and, you know, yeah, but there's not that much substance in him. But yet we had this guy who was introduced to us as Martin Lee, as this guy who ran a homeless, this businessman who dedicated so much of his time to running a homeless center, who was good friends with Aunt May, you know, and with Peter himself. And I mean, they showed this human side to the character before they ever hinted that he was going to be Mr. Negative, you know? And I just thought it was excellently handled. And then even as, you know, Mr. Negative, you know, when, you know, spoilers, when the terrorist attack where he kills Miles' father, well, Miles' father dies like in the blast. And you think like, oh my God, this guy has gone from this really admirable guy to having killed a hero cop, you know, there's no redemption for him, you know, there's nothing. But then later we get to see kind of his origin story, and that, you know, maybe he was a victim as well, you know. And I thought it was an excellent handling of a bad guy, along with another one who I'm sure we're going to get too soon, but honestly, I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I thought from the first probably three quarters of the game, I thought Mr. Negative was perfect, and I think there's that level of self-doubt in him that makes him an interesting character, as you said, and we kind of see that later on. My only issue with Mr. Negative is that he's soon made second class. As soon as you imprison him, he just becomes another regular guy. And I know he's like he gets kind of left out with the lower members of the Sinister Six, and he's in the final parts of the story. But I think he just kind of gets pushed aside too easy after you've had pretty much three quarters of a game building up to this big fight, and then pretty much you just put him in jail, and then he get released pretty quickly by another big baddie who. I think it was done very well, but there's a couple issues there with me as well. What are your thoughts on Mr. Negative kind of playing second fiddle to Dr. Octopus rather quickish? Like it was almost at a snap of a metal finger, shall we say, that Mr. Negative comes a secondary character.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand where what you're getting at there, because I mean it was quite sudden. But I suppose it made sense in the context of the thing, because I guess Mr. Negative's happy to step aside for one, you know, someone that he recognizes as a much superior intellect. And secondly, I mean, because ultimately at the end of the day, as long as Osborn was suffering and ultimately would die, I don't think Mr. Negative cared too much about who was calling the shots. So I suppose it made sense, but I suppose they possibly, you know, I'd agree with you that it could have been handled a little better. You know, maybe we could have seen some, if they'd just shown us more of the bad guys, you know, which is something I would like them to do kind of in moving forward is, you know, maybe if we had some time of seeing the back, like, I mean, what we're getting is Sinister Six movie, you know, eventually.
A Venom film as well, yeah.
Yeah, a Venom film. We had the, okay, it was terrible, but we had Suicide Squad. We're getting a Joker film. Like
Infinity War is probably the biggest one in the Marvel scene, is it? Because that was just a Thanos film, let's be honest.
Yeah, no, that's true. He featured quite predominantly. So I think, like, if we can just see a little bit more of our bad guys' kind of motivations, I thought it was, as I said, that's what I praise, you know, building Martin Lee, showing his human side, and doing the same with Dr. Octavius. But, and even then they seem to be doing similar with Osborn, because obviously I'm assuming we might get Green Goblin in the next movie, but or the movie game. See, the story was so good, it may as well have been a movie. But yeah, so like I like that, but let's also show as well as showing the human side when we're showing their bad side. Let's see how I would have liked to see how they interact together. You know, we've seen so little of it. I suppose we had a little bit of it when. Miles ran into, and I'm sure we'll that's actually part of the gameplay we didn't touch on. I'm sure we will when we get to those characters though. Where we see kind of Scorpion and Rhino interacting together. I would just like to see more of that. If we'd seen a bit more of the Doc Ock and Mr. Negative dynamic, maybe the handover of power, you know, would have made a more sense to people like yourself who picked up on it as something that raised an eyebrow, you know, about how quick it was.
Yeah, that's a concept. The only thing, as you said, character development of the lesser villains is probably an issue. We can probably put Tombstone in this as well, but I think we'll come to side missions because that's probably another negative, let's be fair. There was that scene where I think you first go after Dr. Ock, and you go to his little hideout, and he goes through all the character, what Doc Ock's made for him, where it's like made Vulture a new set of wings that doesn't give him cancer and stuff like that, and he's promised to get Rhino out of his suit. I think that was just a cheap way of adding character development. I think he could have done it. I think he could have done much more if he had a single mission for each of them, and I probably would have added on a good few hours. But yeah, I think it needed it because. I think that's what Batman did so well. The obviously natural comparisons of the Arkham game, but I think it explains who the story behind each individual villain so well, apart from some of the lesser ones. But In this one, there was, we're calling them lesser, but they're going to play such a big part because the Sinister Six is, well, it's all of Spider-Man's enemies. And as you said, I think it definitely needed it. It just needed that thickening out, and some of them probably are of interest. I mean, Scorpion's a bit of a lunatic, and that's his story, but some of the other ones especially are definitely of interest. And I think Taskmaster's definitely the most disappointing one because he's the most interesting one. And most unknown one. But shall we just move on to the big lad? Probably the most interesting character of the whole game is Dr. Octavius, isn't he? I'll start off with the one criticism I have, and it ties into the Martin Lee thing. It's how quickly he goes from being the kind-hearted father figure to Dr. Octopus. I think that's the only thing, is that he goes from... It's the same as Mr. Negative for me. You've spent all this game building up Martin Lee and Mr. Negative, and then in one mission, Dr. Octopus is there and he's got all these contacts and stuff like that. I'm not sure if there was a better way of hinting at a long-term strategy, because there was that anonymous donor, whoever that was, whatever, and then all of a sudden he's become a supervillain. That was the only negative I have from that. But other than that, his character development was perfect, and the father-son relationship between Peter and Dr. Octavius especially was so emotional in such a short space of time.
Yeah, no, as I said previously, you know, when talking about Martin Lee, I really enjoyed the building up the human side of Dr. Octavius, and the, you know, kind of the successes with the project, but then the knockbacks, you know, like Norman pulling the funding, you know, the city funding, you know, I loved all that stuff. I would agree with you, you know, it was quite a quick transition. You know, we had Peter kind of put a nod, oh, it could affect, you know, your brain, basically. Mm-hmm. So we had like that nod to it, but then it was just suddenly like a switch was flicked and he was evil. You know, maybe if we'd seen a little bit more of an internal struggle, you know, I thought maybe they were kind of nodding to that in the actual final boss fight. But even then it was more so after you defeated him. And, you know, there was I'm sure we'll, you know, we may as well go to it now, but mm-hmm. I mean, I liked kind of the back and forth, you know, even though the combat, the actual gameplay wasn't brilliant in the final boss fight, I liked the kind of dialogue back and forth between Peter and Doc Ock. And I mean, I thought it was well scripted, but at that point when Doc Ock is lying on the table, like, you know, you know, beaten, and he's pleading with Peter, a part of me was kind of wondering, oh, is like Peter going to go over to help him? And then is Doc Ock going to like stab Peter in like the shoulder or something, or with like one of his arms? And then Peter's going to have to knock him out or something, you know, just, I would have liked something like that, you know, bit of a kind of change, but, you know, he was just a bit feeble at the end, you know? So I agree with you there that there certainly could have been a bit more of a struggle. And I just wonder, is it down to time constraints? You know, how many more hours would they have had to add on to the game to show Doc Ock struggling? You know, unless they'd introduced the Doc Ock side of him a little earlier in the game, even. I'm not sure how they could have done it, but certainly it would have been nice to see a bit more of an internal struggle there.
I think the balance of getting Mr. Negative explained so well and then adding in Dr. Octopus was maybe a step too far in what was a 20-hour game, because I think it was the 20-odd hours, 30-odd hours, whatever it was, and how long it took you to do the story and a decent amount of the side stuff. It was probably just a bit too much to put into a, not a short game, but a standard game, shall we say. I think it was maybe a smidge too much, but I imagine Dr. Octopus is probably the most well-known Spider-Man villain outside of like Venom, probably Joint 2. So maybe they just expected, okay, everyone knows. As soon as I saw Dr. Octavius, like, he's going to be Dr. Octopus. I mean, it's obvious, going to happen. But I think in a game, it allows you so much freedom and time if you give your developer enough time that you can add all this backstory in well. And that's the only thing with Dr. Octopus. But as I said, once that raised eyebrow was out of the way, I think he was quite perfect. From that Riker's mission onwards, I think he was pretty much perfect. The motivation of him hating Norman Osborn, and that's kind of how him and Mr. Negative kind of joined forces. It seemed pretty perfect for me, and this Devil's Breath stuff, which we haven't really talked about, it seemed a good way of inducing a pandemic type thing. So I think it was really good, and I think we've seen in a couple games, I haven't played God of War yet, but we've seen in Sony games that they love to have this father-son relationship. I mean, do you think that's... Well, let's talk about Peter Parker and Spider-Man then, because this kind of wraps into it. But what did you make of Peter Parker's father figure type thing? Do you think it was just natural with, obviously, Uncle Ben dying and that's his backstory, la la la? But what did you make of Peter Parker's development and Spider-Man's development?
Yeah, I think you could certainly say that the father-son kind of relationships were a theme in this game, because, you know, not only Peter and Doc Ock and Peter and Ben, I think you could argue that, especially early on in the game, that like Martin Lee was also like kind of a senior male figure in Peter's life, that you know, kind of could offer him some guidance, and you know, that was there. And there was, of course, Miles, and his father was a massive part of the game. So I think there's certainly heavy influence of father and son relationships in this game. And I thought they were well handled. So like, I think as far as Peter's character, goes, I thought it was a great Peter Parker, maybe one of the better Peter Parkers in media that I've came across. I mean, let's actually check who the voice actor was. It's kind of drawing a blank there, but, I thought that the obviously it's going to be in any Spider-Man game that the interaction between Peter and the people around him, you know, is central to the game. And I thought those relationships were really well handled, you know, how we've already talked about kind of Doc Ock and Martin Lee, and, but at the same time, MJ and Miles and Aunt May, and you know, even we got some insights to his relationship with Harry, you know, who obviously was absent from the game. So I mean, for me, those interactions, you know, they were so important to the progression of the story, and I think they were really well handled. What did you think?
I think he was done perfectly, and I think it's probably easier to balance a Peter Parker Spider-Man divide in a video game than a film, but I think that's why people love Tom Holland. He seems to be able to do both quite well, and I know he's still playing a teenager, and this one was like a 23-year-old set scientist and stuff like that, but I think this was probably the best balanced one with Tom Holland. I think you've seen with Garfield, he's a good Spider-Man, but I don't think he was a good Peter Parker, and Tobey Maguire, he just looked too old, didn't he? I think he was, again, for me, I think he played the nerd well. I think he was alright as Spider-Man, but he just looked a bit too old and out of place. That was my only concern with Maguire mainly. And, the third film was horrendous. Let's not ignore that. But certainly this one, it just balanced it so well. And you see the development. And this is him who's probably been Spider-Man, I think, Stu said he started when he was like 15, 16, so probably 7-8 years maybe. So you've not joined a new upcoming Spider-Man who's starting out in life. You've joined an established one, and I quite like that. And to add that further extra development that you've seen in relatively new relationships, I think it's a very good story arc that they've added in with the father figures, and I think we've seen we've seen kind of the roles reversed with Miles Morales as well. What were your thoughts on the friendlier secondary characters and your Miles, your Aunt May and your MJs? What did you make of them three?
Yeah, because it was annoying me. Yuri Lowenthal is the voice actor for Peter Parker, and he did, you know, obviously he's a seasoned video game voice actor, and he did an excellent job. I thought they were really well done. I mean, MJ obviously was by Laura Bailey did an excellent job as MJ. You know, like I'm a massive Spider-Man fan since I was a young age, and I think I've oddly MJ has always been kind of like a let's say like a dream girl. That's, you know, the fiery redhead, and I mean, I thought she was so well done. Her parts of the game where she was kind of sneaking around the stealth, I you know, at first I was kind of like, oh, well, they're taking me away from being Spider-Man. But then I was like, I think they got better as the game went on. And you got the one part where you got to have the taser, and that other part where you got to direct Spider-Man to pull bad guys as you position them for him.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was so well done. And I just thought the interactions between Spider-Man and, well, between Peter and MJ were well done. Like, it was interesting that they weren't a couple for this game. They only got together at the end, spoilers. They were broken up. They'd been having relationship problems. You know, there was kind of an issue with the dynamic. You know, MJ thought Peter was too overprotective. And I thought it was, you know, I bought into the interactions between Yuri and Laura when they were playing out these exchanges. Like, I thought it was really well done, that the MJ Peter dynamic. What did you think?
Yeah, I think MJ was done perfectly. She added a certain level of normalness. It's hard to make Peter Parker quite normal, but obviously when it was just them two, it kind of felt normal. And I think there was that scene in the diner, I think it was quite early on, and then obviously the blues and twos go by on the police cars, and it's just like, oh, I've got to go to work. It's like, it just made it feel normal. And then obviously she's kind of the woman in the chair, where you've got Barbara Gordon and stuff like that for Batman. She was kind of like the woman in the chair in this game, and I quite liked that. She was... not the brains, but she was the information point of the game. And not a narrator, because you kind of had Jameson doing that. I don't think he was quite randomly used, but I quite liked it, actually. But yeah, MJ was done perfectly for me. And yeah, as you said, them two being apart, it kind of added that dynamic of what will happen next. And you kind of had Black Cat there, where she was that crappy side missions where you had to take pictures. It was adding that flirting, so maybe there's already something gone on there. I think something happens with them too. I remember from the cartoon, the scene too. So there's maybe that love triangle that they're going to add. I know there's a Black Cat DLC coming out, so maybe something will happen in that one. But for me, I think she was done perfectly. Aunt May was kind of a bit lesser of a secondary character compared to Miles and MJ, but I think Miles was done very well. And we might as well talk about the post-credit scene now, Carl. Obviously, we've seen Miles now become Spider-Man. It's obviously hinting at a sequel, and we'll come to the other two as well. But do you think the need for a sequel, they've added Miles into maybe adding this other secondary character?
Yeah, no, I really liked how they did Miles. And I mean, I felt that it was interesting, because oftentimes when it comes to Spider-Man media, people are kind of complaining that, oh, you know, with the movies, we've seen his origin too much. And obviously for that reason, they didn't do it in Homecoming. They already had him as Spider-Man. So with the game again, you know, we didn't get Peter Parker's origin. As you said, he's been Spider-Man for 8 years, but with that said, we did get the origin story of Miles Morales, and it was spread out throughout the game. You know, we got to see, you know, him, yeah, this hero cop father, and, you know, who inspired him, and, you know, his father dying kind of was a setback for him. But, you know, with Peter's help, and, you know, I suppose Aunt May as well, that's Miles in his own right became a hero even before he got his spider powers, which we seen right at the end. So I thought that was really well done. I thought it was nice to have this little origin.
So yeah, that I quite like Miles's as well. It was like an origin within the game, and obviously we didn't want to see the Peter Parker one because it had been done to death, as you said. And I quite like that Miles had one of his own, even if it was just a post-credit scene, because his character development throughout was quite good. And probably the biggest and most important one for me anyway in the post-credit scene was how Harry Osborn was used. Obviously, it's probably hinting at him being the Green Goblin, but I'm not sure if there was... I think I've read a couple of theories that there's meant to be a symbiote there. I'd probably have to go back and do it again or watch it again. But what did you make of how Harry was used throughout the game and that scene alone?
Yeah, like, I thought it was bugging me, like, in the game. I was like, why isn't Harry in the game? Like, what's this whole thing with him being in Europe? You know, I'm not going to pretend that I seen the twist coming that spoilers, he wasn't in Europe. you know, but at the same time, I wondered why this thing. I was like, have they really only included Harry for these little research station side challenge things? I was like, just doesn't make sense. And, you know, how much him, MJ and Peter kept bringing up Harry. Like, I just knew there had to be something there. So, I mean, I thought the revelation that Harry was sick and that, like, Osborn's motivations, you know, were surrounding, you know, his failure to save his wife and now trying to save Harry. I thought that was really well done. I mean, earlier when we were talking about, you know, how Osborn was this motivating factor for the two big bads in this game, let's not, like, you know, credit where credit's due to Insomniac. While using him as a motivating factor for this game's bad guys, they were also building him up to be a bad guy himself. Like, well, we know he's always a bad guy, but to be one of the villains in the next game, most likely. I mean, there's one point where he picks up a device that looks a lot like a Green Goblin bomb.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
kind of looks at it quite menacingly. So I'm like, you know, are we going to get Green Goblin there with Norman? And meanwhile, are we going to get, you know, what's happening with Harry? Is Harry going to be made into the Hobgoblin? Is he, you know, we don't know what's happening there, but I thought, like, it was really well done. I like how they used, I mean, the bigger picture is there, like, and you have to credit Insomniac for that, you know, while also bringing on the story for this game. They're building a backstory for the next game, which, you know, credit, like, that's kind of the stuff, you know, we see in the MCU movies, and we credit them for it. So, you know, for Insomniac to be doing it here with their Spider-Man video game series or potential series, like, They deserve a pat on the back for it, you know. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliantly done. I think the easy hint's the one at the Green Goblin. I'm gonna have to watch it again for the symbiote thing. I think that's the only one, because I think that's the natural progression, isn't it, for the next game? Because we'll come on to talk about the potential of the franchise, but we've mentioned there's so many villains in the Spider-Man universe. There's Venom, there's Mysterio. I can't remember what they're called, but there's that Taskmaster. When you beat him, he mentioned that he was getting like a 8-figure fee for trying to beat you, and some higher up enemy. I think there's not a mercenary group, but there's some kind of higher up group that was rumored. I can't remember the name, but it just added so much scale to it. And I think the Harry relationship's probably the natural progression, because you've had your father son relationship in this game with your Martin Lee and your Dr. Octavius. In this one, maybe it's your brother figure, if they do a Spider-Man 2. If the brother figure is going to be the big enemy, and it's just interesting the role of Norman. You've obviously said there that he's normally a bad guy, but maybe Harry's the one to become Green Goblin rather than Norman this time, and it can add an interesting character arc. But what are your thoughts on the potential of it? Because we have this whole New York, we see Avengers Tower, we see Doctor Strange's, I can't remember what they're called, temple protecting thing. And we see, like, Jessica Jones's thing, Luke Cage's bar, I think it is. We see so many places that are linked with the MCU and the Marvel TV shows. Do you think there's scale to add in extra heroes rather than just villains?
Yeah, I think most definitely. It was confirmed that like Insomniac have, or like Sony and would have the rights to make games featuring other Marvel heroes. So there's definitely the potential for that. Like I'd expect the next game to be a sequel to Spider-Man, considering all the legwork they've done for building that up, you know, with Norman and Harry and there's some stuff they haven't even quite touched on yet, like Venom, but I'm sure they've hinted in interviews that is a factor. So, but I think definitely there that New York could be used, you know, for other heroes. You know, I'd like to see, you know, maybe with the popularity of the Netflix series, like a Defenders game. You know, people have always wanted a good Daredevil game. I mean, there was one in development once upon a time that looked to have potential, and I think it was killed off by overambition. So, I mean, there's definitely, I'd like to see what they could do with other heroes in that, because they have set up a world here that we could have like a video game kind of cinema game, Marvel game universe, you know, with
MGU.
yeah, like there's potential there, and I mean I'd like to see Insomniac kind of becoming maybe the Marvel studio, you know, that what they're known for, because they really hit it out of the park with Spider-Man, and I want to see them get more chances at you know, some Marvel property. But definitely I want another Spider-Man first, though, because I mean, we have those critiques we've put on kind of the characters and a little bit about the wall crawling and stuff. What if all that, if they get all that and the boss fights, what if they get all that stuff right? Like, how good could this game be? Like, I think the sky's the limit. Like, so, but
if they fix side missions, I think the wall crawling and stuff, I think that you can get away with that, unless you're like, you literally fall into your death every 3 seconds. But if they fix the side missions where you're not doing pretty much fetch quests, and I think the Tombstone one was the only interesting one. If they fix that, whereas I think Batman did this quite well with your side missions. If you do the side missions so well that introduces big parts of the game where say if Scorpion's doing something or something like that, it can add so much to an extra game. That's the main critique for me, was the side missions. If they fix that, it's gonna go from being the most fun game of the year to being the best game of the year for me.
No, I'd agree entirely with that. I think there's definitely room for improvement, but I have full faith that Insomnia can make those improvements, you know, those little tweaks to the boss fights and to the side missions. Because as I said, the side activities, as I said right at the top of the show, that's, like, I thought they were great, you know, the challenges. I'm still actually determined to get the goals and the last few challenges that I have to get. Like, so I thought that was a great way of playing around with the gameplay. So I just think if the side quests just were a little bit more like the Tombstone side quest, although maybe with a better boss fight, because that was another example of a poor boss fight. But like if they can do that, then yeah, definitely, like they can take that step to being, you know, despite being a licensed game, which it's unheard of, but they could be like Batman, you know, in that they're being talked about, you know, in the same kind of pantheon as kind of like The Last of Us and that kind of thing, you know. So, but as I said, I have full faith that Insomniac will make those improvements in the next game. Like there's nothing that I don't think they can't fix.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just realised the time, and I think we're a decent amount over the hour now, so I don't want to get in trouble with the higher ups. But we won't cut anything out. But just for argument's sake, obviously this is the fastest selling PlayStation exclusive. I think that was confirmed. From Disney's point of view and Marvel's point of view, do you think they'd really want to open it up so it's not just a Sony exclusive? I know that was part of the, thing with Spider-Man getting a film and stuff like that, but do you think if somewhere around it they could work in that Xbox and Nintendo could have it and stuff like that, how much of a money-making machine do you think this could be? Because if it's outsold all these PlayStation exclusives, Disney must want that complete market open to it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure, like, Disney would love to have it exclusive, but I gather that, you know, in the deal, like, it very much is tied down to being a Sony exclusive. But I do wonder how many games is this deal for? And once that ends, you know, certainly would Disney want Insomniac making Marvel games cross-platform? Because, like, they would just print money, you know, based on how well this has sold.
Was that Disney wanting to get into the gaming thing a bit more, Pantheon a bit more? I think that was one of our news things a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? Or months ago, that Disney want to make a bigger swing at games.
I think definitely. I think they want to tap the potential of, because I mean they have Star Wars and they have Marvel. I mean, it's just to make games for those properties, you know, it's just there's so much potential, and you know, you can make so much money there. Like, it's, why wouldn't they want to tap that market? So it is something that they obviously are looking to do. And when you've got a success story like this Spider-Man game, you have to cling to it, you know, and especially because, let's be honest, that the Star Wars games haven't really hit the waves expected of them, you know. So, like, I think definitely long term, you know, they will want, you know, kind of things like Spider-Man being, you know, kind of cross platform, and it'd be interesting to see how this Avengers game, when we finally get to see what the hell it is.
I think we can almost put that in a Final Fantasy VII remake yeah. box at this stage.
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, no, I think there's so much potential there, and I think definitely if Disney have their way, we will be seeing an Insomniac Marvel game on Xbox and Nintendo at some point in the future.
Yeah, I think that's what people who maybe got a PlayStation to play this, and maybe are Xbox gamers or Nintendo gamers, that's probably what they want. And I think that's definitely what Disney want, because there's a whole other couple of markets that they could tap into. But I think this has been a good review. I think this has been our first review, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
Yeah. So, shall we finish with marks out of 10 then? What would you give this?
I'd say now for context, I don't give anything a 10. That's nothing is perfect. So, I would say a 9. I give it a 9. You know, maybe.
So that's basically perfect for you if you can't give out 10.
Well, I give 0.5. So, you know, I'm saying 9. And if they improve the critiques that we've had today, you know, I'm sure I could be given the sequel a 9.5 a couple of years down the line. How about your rating out of 10 then?
I'll give it an 8 out of 10, because I think, as fun as it was, the points we've raised during it, I think the pacing issues, or pacing, if that's the word for it, and the lack of side missions, I think 8's the top for a fun game, and then upwards is when you get onto game of the year type stuff. I think so. For the best fun game I've played in ages, I'll give it an 8 out of 10. And when it fixes those issues in the sequel, which we both have confidence in that it'll do, I think then I can restart talking about 9s and 10s.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I understand where you're coming from there.
Yeah. So we'll finish up with what's coming out and what we're planning to do next on 1UP. So I'll go through the game releases that are coming up. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, we probably won't have time to do a preview on that, but maybe do a review when we've both played that. But that probably, for me personally, that'll probably be later on. That comes out on the 2nd of October. And then other big releases that people might be interested in: WWE 2K19 is the 5th of October. Just getting to later date. Call of Duty Black Ops 4 is 12th of October. Just seeing if there's anything else before the big lad. Spider-Man's The Heist, or Marvel Spider-Man's The Heist, I think that's the first DLC, comes out on the 23rd of October. And then the big lad, Red Dead Redemption 2, October 26th. So, Carl, I'm going to try and put you on the spot. I imagine the preview of this is going to be our next podcast. So, how much are you looking forward to Red Dead?
The hype is just unreal. Like I this is like the kind of game I didn't even do that for Spider-Man, but I'm probably going to book a day or two off work just to be able to get my teeth into this game, because I mean the first game was like one of my favorite games, and this one I'm convinced, and you know I don't know why, but I'm just convinced this game is going to be on another level even to that game. So I couldn't put into words how hyped I am, but you know, let's just say it's the most hyped I've been for a game in a long, long time.
Absolutely the same. I cannot wait. It's going to be such a good game. But I think that's going to be our next podcast. But this has been the Spider-Man review. So we'll finish up there. Carl, do you want to give out your Twitter and stuff for people to follow you?
Yeah. So for video game stuff, it is at KMacDW, which is basically just my gamer tag. So it's very uninspired. So you can follow me on there. And just that'll link to my main Twitter as well. So, you can find me on there. I haven't been very active lately, but I'll try. I'm sure in the coming weeks with all these games coming out, I'll be there giving my opinion on them.
Absolutely. And I've been that guy Drinkle. We'll obviously be tagged in the Twitter as well. But thanks for joining me, Carl, and thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. have them sing your praises in their own words, and get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book HostRed sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.